It is Thursday, 27th of August, 2015, and this is episode 256 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome along to another episode. I'm Chris, hosting and joined as ever by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Chris. How are we this week?
All good. All good. We've had a nice bake-off chat, which has put me in a fabulously summery mood.
We should just nail it now. Who's your winner?
I'm currently on the Great British Bake Off competition. It's Flora. However, that will change, so I will adjust my bets. But at the moment, Flora. I don't know why, because Ian's been nailing it. How about you?
I've forgotten his name after just I said it about 2 seconds ago.
Tamal?
Yeah, he's going to win.
There we go. Well, yes. Controversial. Controversial. Let's something else controversial. Ashley Madison. we talked probably about 2 weeks ago now that Ashley Madison, this was the adultery site, so somewhere you could go and register if you wanted to have affairs with people, with like-minded people, and they got hacked, and the hackers said, we've got lots of this data and we're going to release it unless this, that and the other, and the owners said, pretty much said no, and the data's been released, and it's fairly extensive, it turns out, more extensive than even they thought it could be. So it's names, addresses, partial credit card details, biometrics, you know, eye color, likes, dislikes, email addresses. How many users is it? It's some devastating number.
33 million.
33 million users.
With 36 million email addresses. It's it's massive, but it wasn't just like a database set that they put out of users.
No.
It was they actually put out transactions that took
they
place.
They literally
as well.
Got full access to their systems.
Oh yeah, like. I mean it's after this kind of post that I put in, the next day they released 20 gigabytes of data, and it was all sorts of stuff, you know, emails, you know, and how they'd been suppressing competitors, how they'd been hacking into competitors' data sets and pulling their data sets into theirs. You know, it's
pretty ugly.
Yeah, and
I mean, I guess the interesting angle on this is, you know, who are the wrong'uns? Everyone's a wrong'un in this. There's no one comes out of this looking shiny, do they? So you got hackers releasing email addresses of people that, you know, rightly or wrongly have their details on this site. You have a site that is serving a need that doesn't, you know, most people wouldn't consider to be a particularly savory need, but nevertheless it's out there, and then yeah, people releasing this data, no one wins, do they? You can't have a hero in this one.
No, there are no winners,
so I don't know. I mean, the internet's probably in doesn't know what to do. It can't be up in arms. It knows it wants to be up in arms, it just doesn't know at who.
The best bit is a website that I've sprung up so that you can log in and check to see if your details were leaked, which are clearly probably farming more details as you put your email address in.
It's like, you know what I mean? Check if your details are leaked. Enter your details here.
Yeah. So it's like,
two people have committed suicide over this as well. This is you know, properly serious. That news reported earlier in the week that
there was a Scottish MSP whose email address was in there. And she was shocked, saying somebody clearly had registered using her email address.
And there's going to be a lot of people shocked. Other people registered with their details.
It's a bit like the whole, somebody hacked my Twitter account. I do not know how that posted.
You know, of course, there's going to be politicians. Of course, there's going to be people from, you know, government, because at the end of the day, they're just humans and human, you know, all part of the human scale. They're not immune to being twats.
Well, I agree with that. But what gets me is how many were just using, like, you know, company accounts and, you know, .gov accounts and...
I think that's part of the course now. I don't think people think about that anymore, do they?
But surely... Really? Surely you just...
I know that you think about it, but I don't think a lot of people do.
Oh, come on. Surely you just go and get a Hotmail or a Gmail account and just say that's your private one, instead of doing it all through like a work account. Maybe it's just me.
I know your private email addresses.
Yeah.
What one-time emails.
Why have you got 15 email accounts, Ian? Oh, you know.
I just genuinely think that people, yeah, don't think about it like that. It's just my email address, isn't it?
Madness.
Spotify has been tweaking its privacy settings and its agreements, things like that. And I think it's permissions on their apps as well. They've been tweaking a lot of things recently, and people have been up in arms because of the extra permissions it's asking for. It's another one of these situations where the app's asking for weird permissions, and you think, why the hell do you need that? Things, you know, so it's asking for access to your GPS, access to, accelerometer, positional things like that. And everyone's going, well, why the hell do you need that information? I just want to listen to my tracks. And they've kind of come out and said, yeah, we didn't communicate all this very well, but we want to add features, and this is the reason for that, and that's the reason for the other.
And part of me, when I first read it, I was like, wow. The first thing I noticed it was when Minecraft creator had started tweeting about it, saying, Spotify, what are you doing? And then when they came out later on in the day and said, well, you know, we've communicated it badly, but we aren't changing it. You know, we do need to do this. And he was like, well, I'm off. And a few other people were like, I'm off as well. You know,
everyone does that every now and again.
What
don't
a terrible mistake to make. But then it's things like, I mean, you mentioned sensor data. They've got a feature called Spotify running. And the only way that can work is if they tie it to what's happening on that phone at that point in time.
So this is the feature. I think we mentioned it again. It's supposed to choose tracks that are kind of in rhythm to your running.
How's it going to know? How's it going to know and part of it is they're making it clear, because I think Apple have done it for a while, but I think also the latest versions of Android make it very clear now when an app is using a particular feature, and they make it quite in your face. So they're just making it clear
they're trying to make it more and more incremental, aren't they? And when it does need the permission, it comes and asks you then, rather than all up front, to stop some of these weird things. But there's definitely still times when I get an app permission where I click update and it says, I want to know when, you know, who's calling you and when, and what number is associated with things. And you think, no, you don't need to know that.
Yeah.
And you're not there, and therefore I don't upgrade. So there are definitely times, and who knows, there's probably a legitimate feature that they want to add in. But I just think, you know, you don't need to know that.
No, and I've not seen it so much in iOS. And I must admit, I've not used the Android tablet for months now. I've just kind of let it go. It just got too slow. The closest analogy I've got is when an app that says you can associate your Facebook account, and then it says, and here's all the things we'll start to get, you know, like friend to friends and all that. And it's like, no, I don't want that. You know, all I want to do is post a photo. Yeah. Why you do not need all this other information. No.
And they are trying to make this now much more optional as well. So they're adding the, you know, even when it comes up with a permission on Facebook, at least some of them, except for the basic permissions, you can actually say, no, you can't have that permission. And then it's up to the app whether it can deal with that use case where someone has given such and such a permission but not another one. And that's the long and short of where they're trying to aim with it all. I think sometimes some of these problems that people are having is just because of the naming. You know, it's things like, I will have access to your photos and media files. Well, I think we've mentioned this before, you know, if you need to have an avatar or something and it wants to offer you the option just to take a photo with your camera, well, it does need control of you. So it will say, I need control of your camera. I need access to your media files. So in order for it to be able to do that, kind of what some people would consider, you know, basic functionality, it needs to do that. So it sounds a lot worse maybe than it actually is.
And I think if Spotify had maybe said, you know, we want sensor data to support Spotify running. We want, you know, access to your photos so we can support, you know, uploading avatars or whatever. See if they'd maybe just given some examples, made it more obvious rather than just a whole load of, we want all this data. I'm a music app. I'm going to want to access all your sensors.
And sometimes you do think that the operating systems themselves, and I think we're going this way, is temporary access to do something like that when it's needed, that is then revoked, you know, as soon as that action is carried out. Facebook, you know, Facebook used to have all the issues with sharing stuff. So you had to give full permission to someone to get access all your details before they could share on your behalf. Now they enforce a sort of pop-up where it's a dialogue, basically, and you choose to type in some extra words and press send if you want to actually tweet it or post it out. And I think the same kind of thing will happen with these app scopes. So it doesn't ever give it any permanent permissions, but it gives it temporary permissions for an action that you're actually carrying out. So I think we might end up there. I think people are a bit more comfortable with that side of things, but it doesn't make for a slick user interface. That's the big problem at that point.
No.
Okay, Twitter has blocked a couple of accounts. These accounts were set up specifically to monitor when public servants effectively deleted tweets from their account for whatever reason that they deleted them. It would notice that that tweet has been deleted and it would store it in its own Twitter stream and repost it out there. Effectively, you know, why the hell have they deleted it? What have they said? And here we go. Here's a record of things that have been deleted. Twitter has shut them down now. So it happened in America last year, but there's two UK, I believe, accounts that have had this and now happened to them. And you know, again, people didn't quite know how to take it. Twitter have said we're doing this because we don't want to be in a situation where something you tweet is just forever and irrevocably out there. You should have the right to delete something you've tweeted.
And I can see both sides, and I almost want to say there's almost like there's a time window. See, if somebody tweets something, it's a genuine mistake. They can usually fix it, you know, fairly quickly. The bit that gets me is when somebody puts up something really controversial and then, you know, two or three days later, you know, removes it as if to say, I didn't really say that.
Or permanently writes up things, constantly and continually gaffes because that's there. And some PR person has to keep, you know, correcting them.
Well, look at Trump.
That's when you want to see when someone's been deleting stuff.
Look at Trump in America right now. Some of the stuff he's putting out there is, it's almost deliberately out there. And he's winning.
The equivalent of his election bait, clickbait, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, and he's out there winning, you know. And I still ultimately think he won't win. But at the moment, he's carrying a big enough. It's almost like the kind of Farage effect. You know, he's got that kind of. Let's be really controversial. I'll grab 10-15%, and that'll be enough for me to carry. You know, who knows how many? You know, it probably gets him so far in that election race. But at the same time. And there's quite a lot of the MPs, and you know they'll do it deliberately, they'll put something up, and some of the celebs as well, put something up deliberately provocative, and then it's like, oh, mysteriously deleted a few hours later. Once all the controversy's out there and their name's out there, but then nobody can really go back as a record and see it. The only good thing about this is that you can still do it on websites, so they can still host a website and show the deleted tweets. You just can't see it within
I'm sure there'll be cleverer ways, ways of doing this still. They'll just have to work outside of the Twitter fire hose and all that kind of stuff.
I still think there's something about, you know, if you're elected to an office, then you've got some responsibilities that a celeb or somebody else necessarily doesn't have.
The guy owned the site sort of said that if you're a public figure, then the things you say on Twitter should be counted as a public record and therefore should be able to be seen and not just deleted randomly.
And there's that whole argument, should you be able to edit a tweet? Because at the moment you can't, you know, you can delete it. But the way Twitter works, if you edited a tweet, you could easily put something up and then just edit it out and you'll see all these replies and there'll be lots that they would... And I think that's maybe why Twitter haven't done it up to now. It's just
because Facebook have had that problem and they've got round it by saying if there's no comments made against a post, then you can edit it. As soon as you start having comments against that post, you're no longer able to edit it.
So. No, and Twitter, I guess, doesn't really have comments. It has at replies.
Yes.
You know, so it's a different mechanism.
Like, anyway, that was some controversy there. Vlogger guidelines. Advertising is getting involved in... Committee of Advertising Practice. That's CAP. Basically getting involved in what vloggers are doing. Vloggers are becoming a massive part of teenage and younger lives, basically, becoming very, very watched. And advertising is following those eyeballs. And with vlogging, there's no real standards at the moment as to, you know, do you highlight when you are advertising a product that you've been paid to a product place or to talk about during your vlogging sessions? Are you really giving that kind of product endorsement or is it because you've got money? And say the CAP and the Advertising Standards Authority are saying, yes, you should be highlighting when you are receiving money for doing product placement or talking about things. So you should make it clear that it's a sponsored message.
a good thing.
I think it's got to be. I think most of the big podcasts and vodcasts probably do it. It's, you know, in the responsible tech, you know, in the responsible old sort of journalism arenas. I'm talking about the sort of tech podcasts that we hear that are based on, you know, things like CNET and, you know, other big enterprises. But if it's a kid in their bedroom with, you know, getting offered, I guess, what could be sizable sums of money to promote products.
Well, there was a video I watched, and it was something like some of the big YouTube folk, you know, that are getting, you know, like your PewDiePie and all these kind of ones that are getting, you know, massive followings. It was like feature a product, and it was 20, 30 grand. It was massive amount of money. It wasn't trivial.
And you see celebrities all the time that, I'm really enjoying posting this on my Apple.
You see it on Twitter. Thanks to such and such for this body lotion. It's been fantastic. And it's like, is that an ad? Or is that just somebody?
Yeah.
And I know later on, is it Davina McCall's? Because she promotes her own stuff. But at the same time, there's other times she's actually said, nobody's paying me for these. I'm just, you know, thanking, you know, whatever. And you're like, okay, is that genuine? And then there's other people just think, yeah, you're at it. You're totally at it.
I quite liked it when Scherzinger, she posted, I'm really loving my Samsung Galaxy 4 and tweeting, and the tweet said sent from my iPhone. Brilliant, loved it.
The best bit is Gruber. So John Gruber, if you don't know him on it, but he loves doing the whole, you know, when it's a new phone and it's a celeb that's done it, and loves the fact that it'll say from, you know, tweet from an iPhone, because a lot of the time it's you know, they're not running their accounts, they're, you know, they've got a PR agency, you know, who's got the password and username, and they're doing the tweet. But it is great to see.
Facebook. Launches. I think it's launches M. It's basically, this is Facebook's answer to kind of Siri and Cortana, and it's going to be injected into their Messenger app. And it's basically a hybrid system. So whereas Siri and Siri Cortana and whatever Google Plus, whatever it's called, they're all kind of algorithms and computing working out what you are asking and trying to find the answers based on all their kind of search data. Facebook M is going to use a combination of that plus an army of real people to try and give you a more personalized service.
This was weird. I don't know. I mean, they're saying it's a few hundred, you know, residents in San Francisco are going to get this opened up to them. And it was weird because I started reading it and I was like, you're doing this through Messenger? You know, it seemed a really weird place to do it, but you basically text M and ask them, you know, what will I get my mum for my birthday? And then they start helping you organize that.
And at the moment, it's not using any of their social data for these requests. It's purely based on questions it will ask you back. But those questions can come from the computer, and they can come from, say, real people. And the idea is that the answers that those real people sort of end up supplying can enhance the computer responses going forward. So the idea is, I guess, to get the computer learning what a real person would offer in the situations and with the questions and the kind of questions that would get asked, up until the point they don't need this big army of people. But they've said that they're likely to employ in thousands of people to do this on a contracting basis, to offer these things. And they can go as far as to book you restaurants, book venues and flights, and even, you know, quite in-depth, really.
But it's like one of these things. See, when you read it, you think that's not going to scale. You're not.
It doesn't
be able
sound
to...
like it's going to scale. Does it?
No, and it just all feels a bit weird. Or some of the, and if, you know, we cover a lot of weird stuff on here. Sometimes it's obviously companies taking a punt, and then a year or two down the line, it's kind of failed. This feels like one of those that's certainly
not going to last in its present form. But then again, it's still early doors, right? They're still in the real first beta phase.
Sure,
they've only just moved slightly outside of their own Facebook, you know, internal structures. But I mean, the reason they're having to do this is because they've got an app that they don't have a platform of their own. They need to give a reason to people to load up their app, because basically it's you know, as with any apps, it's loaded for a while, but then it fades into the background if it's not used. So they need to keep giving people a reason to load up their app. they've got the resources to make it happen.
No, they do, and they reckon that you know, that this cost is going to be offset by revenue growth. So it's clearly somebody's done the maths and they think this is worth a punt. The weird bit when I read the article, so it's an article from Wired, because I had in my head it would be things like, you know, what present will I get, or I want to go to a restaurant, or I want to go and eat somewhere different. Because you're, even when you've got Yelp and all these other things, because you've got somebody saying this is a great new place and I can book it for you right now, you know, and they might have some sort of revenue deal that's pushing people to those places. So part of me got all that, but they said one of M's most popular requests, because they did a Facebook employee trial, the service can call your cable company and endure the endless hold times and automated messages to help you set up home Wi-Fi or cancel your HBO. And it was right, like,
so how people are having slaves sit on hold for them.
Yeah. And I'm like, that's... And fair enough, there was always, remember that guy who did the kind of, you know, the 4-hour boss and the 4-hour work week and all that kind of stuff? That's just an evolution of that, where you're saying, I'm too busy to do this, you go and do that for me. But I'm not paying anybody. It's like, how does that work?
It's
like having a free PA, you know, almost. It's like, you know, could you go and do this and go and do that and invite all my 20 friends and go and do this? Is there a limit to what you can go and ask it to do?
And you know, the only way this will really work is if those revenue deals do extend out to a pretty universal structure. Otherwise, they're going to be sending a lot of people to McDonald's.
Yeah, or does it become, you know, so it's free just now, but does it become such a, you know, do people rely on it so much that it's like, actually,
is there a second button, which is personal assistance? Because I mean, there are personal assistance services out there that already do this with a real human. So it's kind of this weird hybrid. Maybe you'll get this secondary button which says, I want a human doing this. I want a, you know, I want. I'm happy with the automated kind of process. Amazon Free Delivery is going to have up to, or going to be extended up to 1,300 locations.
13,000.
Sorry. Yeah, missed a zero.
13,000
locations around the UK. So this is when you spend over a minimum amount. So it's £10 of books or £20 of actual items. They will deliver it free to a store or location close to you. You can see this extending. I think I said it ages ago, the high street won't be a high street anymore. It will just be a pickup point. You know, that's what shops will end up using for. I think, it's kind of a logical extension of having somewhere that's delivered close by. If it's just your shop just across the road, saves you having to be in, doesn't it?
Yeah. And also the you know, from a delivery company's point of view, I mean, Amazon
much
are obviously...
cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing all their own logistics now. You know, so certainly here, it's always Amazon Logistics that are delivering it. So instead of having to visit, you know, 50 households that morning, I'll visit 3 lockers and dump it all in.
Yeah, and it, like I say, they because they're only having to deal with that one delivery, it's fine. They can control that. And if you want it to your door, then go for it. But it's going to cost you a little bit more, and that seems reasonable.
Yeah.
iPlayer is going to add some extra features, or is adding extra features. So its catch-up service that is already available on the web. Is going to be added to its other delivery platforms over time. So that means you can watch live TV, but also actually if the program's already started, you can press the button and actually skip to the beginning of that show. So you can sort of time shift if necessary. It's kind of different from Netflix, but they're responding to, you know, the Netflix of this world by offering extra features on their online services. So all sounds good.
Yes, sorry. I thought you were going to jump on and talk about cross-device pause and all that kind of stuff.
Have you got any comment, any insight?
The cross-device pause I thought was great. It's a bit like the whole, see when I'm following Twitter on the Mac and I want to go to the iPhone, I love the fact that I'm using a third-party client and I don't need to scroll through tweets to get where I need to get to. I still don't get people who say, oh, the Twitter client on its own is fine for me. It's like,
no,
that drives me up the wall. And this is the same, you know, if I'm watching something, you know, on the computer and I then think, I've got to go to bed.
Oh, I've got to go to bed. Or, oh, I've got to go and catch my train. On the train, you can quickly spin it up and you'll start from where you left off.
Yeah, and Plex has been doing it for quite a while, which is quite handy. You know, just that whole, you know, I can pick up and go somewhere else and it's just resumes. And it's like, that's nice.
Yeah, and that certainly is a good thing on Netflix, and it's good that it's been brought to the TV shows.
I'm also thinking they had to do these kind of things when BBC Three goes online only. some, you know, it needs to be a bit more full featured to allow it to be a proper channel, a proper, you know, experience.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Instagram, thinking outside the square, it's allowing you now to post landscape and portrait photo formats. Doesn't just stick you to your square format. In a move that I guess has been long requested, and finally they've relented.
Yeah, I mean, do you use Instagram?
No.
So I kind of fell out with it, but then fell back in with it, and I love it. You know, it's an everyday visit for me, just for the people that I follow, kind of some, and it's a mixture of brands, some people, and some friends. And I just love seeing, you know, because the bit that irritates me is see somebody that like will post to Instagram and also to Twitter. So I don't need every photo on Twitter. See if you just put your best one. See if you take five that day. I've just got some people that are like, so I think I've actually now, via filters, blocked Instagram photos appearing on Twitter because it's just, I don't want to see it. I know it's me being just nasty.
No, I get it. You don't want to see the same four things in the same four locations.
But also, a lot of the time, it's just like, I don't need this. This is not what I use Twitter for. But Instagram, I really like it, but it is limited to that square format. And they've now opened it up. But it's weird, Instagram, I think, it's such a big platform. It is so limiting. Remember they criticised Flickr because they said you've not got a mobile alternative and you're going to get eaten up, and sure enough they did. You know, Flickr, I still post stuff in Flickr, but it took ages
to
get
it. It's pretty dead.
Yeah.
You used to get comments even at random photos, but it's not like that anymore.
I still get the odd one, actually. It's weird.
Fair enough.
I think because I've got Creative Commons in mind, so anybody can use my stuff. So every once a month, I'm going to use
that
this
might
on
well
a
bite
post.
You.
Yeah.
If you do a really good photo, someone uses it in a national advertising campaign. I think that's what people were moaning about one point, wasn't it? How many times their photos were used.
And I think my only small claim to fame is there's some, what was it? Is it some data London site used one of my London photos?
Hmm.
Which I didn't even know about. They never contacted me, but I happened to stumble across it when I was looking at my Flickr stats.
Hang on a minute.
I didn't even recognise it. I was like, what a minute.
They made it better then.
How very dare you? How very... But the thing I find weird is, like, and you mentioned it right before we started, it's no iPad app. You know, it's iPhone and Android only, and there's no tablet option, which seems
weird. I still
weird.
Find it bizarre, yeah.
You know, such a lovely screen, such an opportunity for big photos, and it's not there.
You'd have thought they'd jump at it, but they really are resolute in their, nope, it's not what we do.
And I can't regram, you know, so there's lots of third parties that allow you to, you know, like, just, you know, repost or share, and you can't do it from the actual client. Just seems another weird one. So I'm wondering if this is them now saying we need to add a bit more.
But it's not done them bad so far, does it? It's still the de facto norm for, you know, posting photos. And I think when it first launched, there was doubt as to whether it would, you know, do we really want somewhere just to, like, put these photos? It got quite a lot of, you know, piss take out of it. But actually, it did work.
It was one of the first ones to do it. I mean, it was free. Photos looked great, and it did all those filters.
I was gonna say it was the first one that really did filters in a big way, wasn't it?
And it was,
and how they caught on.
And it was that whole make it look pretty. Oh, my photo looks great. Even a bad photo, oh, that looks fantastic.
Yeah, looks bad. That's grain it, vignette, black and white.
Yeah, I've spent £600 on an iPhone, and I'm going to make some grainy black and white image. My brand new camera.
Post that bad boy. There you go. Yeah, like I say, maybe this is the start of an extension to their empire. Galaxy Note 5 has been had a few people posting about how annoying its stylus is. So this, I'd be interested to know where your feelings are on this story once I've kind of outlined it. So apparently it is possible to put the stylus into the Galaxy Note 5 upside down. And when you do so, sometimes when you pull it back out again, various things snag or break, of which Samsung's reply is, we suggest you read the manual and put the stylus in the right way round, is their answer. I'm interested to know what your angle is on it.
And when I read that, I thought, that sounds fair enough, because, you know, it seems kind of obvious if that's the way I don't know, maybe it's just me. I would always looked at it and thought, if that's the way it goes in and out and you need to push it, you know, you need to push the top of it to kind of click it in and out, I'm not going to put it in the wrong way. Maybe it's just me. And I thought it was a bit of an overreaction. It's a bit like you're holding it wrong and it's the phone's broke and you know, they had all that thing
with
iPhone.
This reminded me exactly the same people that were bending their iPhone 5 using their thumbs going, oh, look, it bends!
Yes. And fair enough, there were some people saying it just bent naturally in the pocket.
Yes.
But it was like, but you kind of know that you're probably... And maybe, I don't know, I take care of my gadgets and I see some people who will just literally throw things around or put a phone in beside their keys and change. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I do that. You'd hate me.
Oh, I would stab you.
Yeah. With those keys. Give me those keys.
So stab. I thought it was actually just another typical overreaction. Yeah. The bit I didn't like was when they said, say they've said, read the manual. It doesn't come with a manual.
Right.
So there's no bits of paper that comes with it that says you must insert it only one way. You have to go online and read the PDF manual. And how many people are going to do that?
Sure. Agreed. And I think it's not like it's a tapering pen either. So it obviously will go in the wrong way up, which again, there's part of me which thinks the kind of the up in armsness of the people that have had things break because they've used it incorrectly is a little bit internet related. You know, it's just, we hear from these people. But yeah, I my opinion was these people should put the stylus in the right way around.
Yeah. I do think it's a shame if you spent £600, £700 in a phone because it is expensive. Because if you put it in the wrong way and seemingly it snags on some sensor that stops working. Yeah. So, and the sensor is all about when the phone's off, when you take the stylus out, it almost goes into like an e-ink mode so you can take a note. And then when you hit save, that's when everything else wakes up. That seemingly doesn't work anymore. That's the bit that gets broken. So some little plastic bit catches and breaks.
But there are plenty of things in this world that don't work unless you use them in the right way.
Yeah.
And if if I dunk a phone in the bath, it doesn't work anymore.
So gut feel, I'm pretty sure any phones that are getting released or any Note 5s getting released are probably going to have a little pamphlet in it from now on that says insert it the right way.
Or at least make it impossible so you can't put it in the wrong way.
And I do wonder whether they'll just tweak the design inside just to say, you know.
You know, now that they know it's an issue, they'd probably be silly not to work that.
Remember there was a whole lot of stuff about
the new design thing. But,
yeah, you know. but remember with the iPhone, and I can't remember, which version was that, the first, was it the 4? I can't remember. It's a 4 or 5, and you're holding it wrong. And,
the fully aluminium.
And there was some lots of rumors about that 3 or 4 months after they'd done some little tweaks and all that kind of stuff, and it was like, no, it's just the next version. They fixed it.
Google is we've got a little glut of Google stories. Their new version of Android is coming out. It's going to be called Marshmallow. It's been known as M until now, but now they've given it their name, and. This is their final kind of, I mean, now that it's got a name, it's basically just, we're only just before release now, basically. It's got to its final developer preview stage. Good for them.
Yes, well done. And
hope it makes my phone quicker, because at the moment my phone is dying.
It's not, it's just going to make you want to buy another one.
No, it's probably because I keep putting keys and coins in the same folder.
Ooh.
Google Hangouts has got its own website. So you can go to hangouts.google.co.uk and then it's basically just a simple site that allows you to get in contact with your contacts via phone, via Hangouts, and generally you can message in there as well.
It's kind of works quite nicely, and it's replaced my Google Plus tab that I used to have. I now have a Hangouts one. So when we come to do our wonderful podcast.
Yeah, I'm still inside of Gmail because I'm in there anyway, and therefore it gives me the same things. But it is nice. It's a nicer environment. It chooses a random background. It looks pretty. Like, you know, why not? Good for them. They've also released a Wi-Fi router, which is an interesting one. So, again, it's called OnHub, and it's designed to be extremely easy to use. It's got all the smart features in it that you might expect. Up to a max speed of 1900 megabits per second, which is pretty special.
It is pretty fast.
13 antennas it's got in a circular arrangement. It's designed to be at kind of, they reckon it works best at eye level, so that's why they've made it a fairly pretty cylinder kind of shape. And yeah, it looks nice. And again, it's showing Google's intent to go into that kind of hardware market. You know, they've gone with partners up until now, but they've not mentioned that this is with a partner. This is one of their own products.
And I think the other thing as well, there's lots of clever bits in it, you know, that's trying to work out that this particular device maybe wants priority. So it makes sure that it's doing its own prioritization internally. So it's doing lots of smart little things. And it's also, it looks like it's going to be a bit of a hub for their Internet of Things.
That's exactly what it's for, right?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, Apple are rumored to be doing the same with Apple TV. Yeah. It's going to act as its hub. Which I'm kind of surprised at that they've went down that route, but then maybe that's because they'll have an app store on it and it'll do other things, and that's the route they want to go down. But $200, and I think that the nice thing is it does look decent. You know, it doesn't look like, you see, when you see the routers and it's got like 15 aerials sticking out of it, you're not going to want that sitting next to a TV. You know, you want to tuck that away somewhere, which is the worst thing you can do.
All the interfaces are all graphical interfaces as well. So it visually, you know, it's no longer these lists of IP addresses of connected devices. They've actually got graphics there showing a mesh of things that are connected. And that's going to be important in the Internet of Things kind of world, where you just, you know, you want to be able to see that your fire alarm is connected up and your this, that, and the other is attached. And nice little graphics. It makes that an easy prospect rather than a complicated technical one.
And best feature, a dimmable status light. I hate all these routers and things that have bright lights and you can't turn them off. Because like DVD players and amps for years I've had, you know, you can put it, you can either turn it off or you can put it, you know, quite low.
And some of them are blinding. Those LEDs can be really blooming bright.
So the Apple, my Apple Extreme router, it used to sit in another room and it was very bright. I had tape over it.
Yeah.
And it was just like, so I've got this lovely elegant device. I need to tape over the light because it was just so bright at night. It was ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but there you go. So people are catching on to that as well. YouTube gaming channel has been released. We talked about this a while back, but it has now come to fruition. And it's a site all of its own, really. You can get to it from the main YouTube site, but it's also available. I think it's gaming.youtube.com or something along those lines. You can get to it. And it's like a full-on interface and allows for live streaming of games and pulls together all that gaming content that they've already got into one sort of relatively easy to access area.
Yeah, so you can, I don't know if you've tried it, you can...
briefly.
So you can do things like follow games and you can follow people, you know, so follow the kind of YouTube, you know, celebs on it as well. But it's quite nice to be able to, you know, pick like Rocket League and say, yeah, follow that, and it kind of promotes that content.
But I still haven't caught on to all this game stuff.
No, some of it I do like. It depends. I think when a game, it's like the moment, every so often I'll dip into just amazing Rocket League goals and go, yep, I'll never do that. It's a bit like watching Halo Kills. And when Halo comes out, I know I'll probably be watching some of those just to go, wow, that's great. And then I'll stop. Yeah. The bit I was surprised at is the apps, I think, for me, work quite well. So I've only tried iOS ones and they work fine. I thought the website was atrocious. I thought it was just really bad.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, again, one of these kind of weird hidden hover things where you go to the right-hand side and things appear, and you go to the left-hand side and things appear.
But it was overlaying it on the video as it was playing back, and I'm like, no, I'm not getting this. It just
I wasn't too keen either. But that's easily sortable if they get bad feedback on it. What I did quite like, you know, I was in the main YouTube sort of standard YouTube, if you like. I did a search for a game. And then the actual YouTube logo changed top left of it. And when you clicked on it, then it took you straight into the actual gaming site. So I thought that's quite cleverly thought out.
Yeah, nice.
That if you're searching for a game in the main YouTube, it offers a quick solution to get into the actual main.
And I think the thing that will drive it on is whether the kind of the big, the kind of live streaming element of it, you know, whether, because Twitch has got that sewn up so much at the moment, and it's whether YouTube starts to rival it. And also because they are doing things like, you know, we do 60 frames per second, and they do a much, allegedly a much better quality, but time will tell.
Now that Twitch is so embedded in the next generation consoles, and those next generation consoles are, you know, Microsoft for one, it's not particularly keen, I'm sure, on dumping all its content onto YouTube. But then again, it'll only take will Twitch survive under this kind of pressure? You know, I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily a good thing that YouTube are trying to steal all that traffic. But nevertheless, like, I don't know that Twitch are going to survive it. We'll see. Like you say, it's going to take a big contract going to YouTube rather than Twitch, and then suddenly things might twitch.
Yeah, my gut feel is that I think probably it will. I think Twitch has got a big enough lead. But it's a bit like, you know, people saying, well,
YouTube probably Yeah, it's about monetizing and.
But people were said like, well, Apple Music kills Spotify, and it's like no, and I see it as kind of similar.
I don't know. There's something about this because gaming's such a marketable thing, and having all the YouTube's sort of demographics and things and all that data it captures in the background. I wonder whether Twitch is set up to be that kind of delivery platform set up for the marketers, basically.
And I think just going back to your console comment, I think maybe 2 or 3 years ago that would have been true. But you know, I think both of them now make it easy just to throw it up in YouTube, because even though Twitch was there for the live streaming, it wasn't there for that kind of whole overall storage.
Yeah, so they've still got the YouTube upload, haven't they?
And I've just made it like, you know, share YouTube, because that's what everybody wanted to do. Even though there was the whole share it to Microsoft or share it to OneDrive, it's like, no. Nobody wants to really do that.
No, no one's going to watch it if I do that.
No.
Yeah. All right. That's the end of our news this week. Have you got a pick?
No, September 9th, but Apple have just announced tonight that September 9th is going to be their iPhone event.
Okay.
And
so not far away.
It's a week and Wednesday.
There we go.
Not far. So I guess I'll have a new iPhone in 2.5 weeks.
If not, you'll have definitely got one on the schedule.
And the kind of weird thing is, it's seemingly the place where they're doing it is a 7,000 seater auditorium.
Oh, so they're going big this time.
Yes.
That's good. That's a good sign, isn't it?
Well, hopefully that means there's like a new Apple TV in the horizon.
Well, maybe there's something else they want to let you know.
One more thing.
Yeah. Better be better than the last one.
What was the last one?
Apple Music was a one more thing, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, but that was just a bad demo and a bad product on a desktop. I actually like it on the phone.
A lot of people have said it's quite good as a discovery tool. The human curated discovery is, surprise, surprise, is better than machine curated.
It is very. So in my 3 month trial, and I don't know how many months in, I'm actually getting a lot more out of it than I did with Google. Google was great at the start and it really tapered off. Whereas with this one, it's consistently been good for me.
And I find like Spotify is it churns up the same thing over and over again, unfortunately. They've got such an opportunity with that app to go further, and they just haven't quite nailed it yet. Anyway, that's the end of our podcast. If you want to find out more about us, the podcast, what we do, etc., digitaloutbox.com, info@digitaloutbox.com is our email address, and Twitter is digitaloutbox. I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK. I would say all my racing's on academyracer.co.uk if you want to follow along, but at the moment it's not. I'm in embargo at the moment. Didn't go so well at the weekend. How about you? Where can we get hold of you, Ian?
Twitter is Reaper and bloggers IanD.net.
Thank you very much. Let's talk to you next time, which will only be a week to the Apple event, then it'll be very exciting.
Super excited.
Super excited. Speak to them. Bye.
Ta-da.
Ta-da!
Ba-dum.
iPhone S or a full one?
iPhone 6S, it'll be.
Little bump.
And I said I wouldn't, but.
You know you will. It'll be a bump and they have something else to tell us, won't they? Maybe it is the time for the TV. They've done the music.
Yeah, I think it'll be a camera bump. Usually the S's get a camera bump.
They get camera bump and a little bit more power, right? And maybe
the prices stay the same. The main ones tend to get the, you know, well, we've changed the form factor or we've done something spectacular.
Yeah, yeah. So there's going to be, look at all this extra you get, and then they're going to go, it's at the same price as the old one. Yeah, that's what's going to happen. We don't even need to watch it.
You're right. And Apple TV will just be an updated Apple TV. See, I did read a horrible rumor that, yeah, it's going to have an app store and it's going to do all this, but it'll have the kind of same front end. It's like, no.
I've not seen the front end on the new apps or any on the new Apple TV. I've only seen the old one.
Cack. It's just the same. It's just a series of like buttons. And the more channels that get added, the more buttons you've got. You're scrolling through them all. It's like, this is gash.
Get it here first.